everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2024, and you're listening to episode 396, which is a discussion about the Trad Wives Movement. Today's guest is Anne Kennedy. She has an MDiv and is the author of Nailed It, 365 Readings for Angry or Worn Out People. Anne blogs about current events and theological trends on her Substack, Demotivations with Anne. Anne has written an article for her Theological Trends column for the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called How Traditional Are Tradwives? Evaluating the Social Media Movement. And you can read her article for free on our website, equip.org. That's EQUIP.org, where all of the Christian Research Journal content and new articles is completely free and not under a paywall. Anne, it's good to have you on again.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, today we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into a movement called the Trad Wife Movement, and it's causing a lot of ink to be spilled in the press and just kind of like anybody that follows cultural trends, because it is a movement that depicts women in very traditional roles. Kind of, I think the stereotype would be Leave It to Beaver, kind of 1950s June Cleaver, but probably more than that, because some of the women in Trad Wives, you know, probably have a lot more children than June Cleaver did. I think she had two kids. But I want to ask you what a trad wife is, because that does need some clarity, because there's different kinds of trad wives, and then people who aren't actually trad wives, but because their content has an aesthetic that comes across like a trad wife, that the computer algorithms on TikTok and Instagram will suggest their accounts. So what is a trad wife?
I confess that I wrote my whole article and I asked the question in the beginning, and then I went on not to define it at any point for like 2,500 words. So I'm going to try to do that. But there are it's like many social media phenomena. It's really slippery. And so every time I come across a definition, I find that the definition doesn't really hold when you encounter, like when you come across, you know, if you're watching reels, you might find some that fit with the definition that you have just read, and then a bunch that don't at all. So I would have said before that a trad wife is just a woman who is living a traditional lifestyle, but if you consult like other, you know, that's just sort of probably what you would think. Maybe not rad trad. I'm not really even sure what there's like a rad trad vein of amongst my Catholic friends who, you know, have like very traditional Catholic lifestyles and that they live out in a religious way. But then the word trad sort of shifted over to just be on its own. And so, the Urban Dictionary says that a trad wife is a word that's used by men in alt-right circles to refer to women who embody the qualities they're after, like chastity, submissiveness, and a willingness to do household chores. But if you go online and you start watching reels, you'll discover that that's just really not the case, and that trad wife as a social media phenomenon is really an aesthetic. It could be a woman who, well, it's a woman. So far, there are not men who are claiming to be trad wives, but a woman who is keeping her house in some form, usually filming herself, and is, you know, has like picked some kind of aesthetic that is, harkens back to some former period, maybe, or, you know, that's kind of modern. Like if there are trad wives who wear jeans, on their Instagrams. But it's somebody who probably I would say is valorizing home life in a usually often a very beautiful way that definitely garners clicks. So I guess you might say that there are like maybe actual trad wives who women who live a traditional lifestyle in their homes and with their families and who may or may not have an Instagram account, and you may or may not ever know that they exist. And then there's the trad wife social media phenomenon where you definitely have to have a camera, and if you don't see it, it doesn't exist. And that sort of second social media phenomenon is what's, I think, capturing all the attention, because obviously women who live in a more traditional way have always existed in American life, and nobody really got hysterical about it before 2022 when the New York Times discovered the trad wife. So I would say it's a fun rabbit hole to dive into because it's so diverse actually and so slippery. And there are so many people who are so upset about it. But at the same time, I mean, everybody that I'm friends with has their favorite trad wife account that they follow on Instagram or TikTok. So that I can see now that I probably have not defined it very well, but everybody should just pick their own definition. That's kind of where we are in our social media world.
It seems like there's a variety of definitions for a trad wife, because when you read the coverage, for some people, it's an alarming anti-feminist version of women who should be reading Betty Friedan's classic work. As a matter of fact, in the Washington Post, in their April 2024 article, the subtitle is, "Some young women see patriarchy as a solution, not a problem. What in the feminine mystique is going on here?" So I've seen the feminine mystique referred to in various different articles, but in the case of the Washington Post article, they're really not talking about some other aspects of trad wives that I want to ask you about, like religious ones, not religious ones. The part of the trad wife movement that they're talking about is what they call stay-at-home girlfriends, SAHGs, and these are not, like they say, stay-at-home moms that are wrangling toddlers and, you know, doing school drop-offs, but these ladies are just doing self-care on themselves and keeping themselves super fit to be in a perfect situation, you know, look perfect for their boyfriend or whatever. So I think that's really fascinating, because on the one hand, there's some people that saying, well, the trad wives are all these traditional religious women who are having a lot of kids and baking bread. But in the case of this really in-depth article from the Washington Post, they're criticizing women who are trying to marry men for a life of ease, which came about, I think their particular article came about with an article that was in The Cut about a woman who decided to marry an older guy, an Ivy League educated woman who decided that really her way to success is not through the Ivy League, it's to marry an older man. So, you know, I agree with you that we're kind of like all over the map, but you said that, you know, there's a lot of social media accounts and there are a lot of different women that are trying to take advantage of kind of the trad wife. And you see them, if you start looking at trad wife stuff, you see them in your algorithm. So aside from the people who are like living for ease, I guess the Washington Post calls those trad wives or girlfriends, what's a more typical, or what's the stereotype, I guess, out there for what a trad wife social media account on TikTok or Instagram would be like?
Well, so I was really conflicted because I meant to sort of do, you know, a broad sweep and try to look at every single account that I could out there. But what happened to me, I think, is what happens to everyone, is that I got caught sort of in certain accounts and couldn't stop watching them. So, and as I said, unlike what people, I think, in Washington Post or even Christianity Today would say, that it's, you know, that it's a sort of subversive form that should cause everybody alarm, I actually think the trad wife, the hashtag at least, and the kinds of content that shows up is really varied. As I said, it's very diverse. I mean, there are certain constants, meaning that you're watching somebody in their home, you're watching a woman in her home, it doesn't have to be a farmhouse, although there are a lot of great sort of farmhouse accounts of women doing laundry, wearing linen dresses, you know, beautiful shots of bread rising and then baking and little children. That's sort of one, you know, tack, one group of accounts that you could watch. But there's also women in, you know, like a small apartment who is still, I would say, probably trying to lean into a tradwife aesthetic where you're really keeping house. You're concentrated on your own space, and you may or may not even appear very much wearing usually something that's beautiful. It doesn't have to be from the 1950s. This one article I read said, you know, it's kind of snide, but it is sort of true. You can sort of choose the Little House on the Prairie option, the 1950s. You could go more modern. The Lisa at Farmhouse Boone, who I watched quite a lot, and it's very, very mesmerizing. She wears, you know, sort of, she wears jeans, very up-to-date jeans, but she puts a linen apron that she sewed herself over it, and then makes, you see long shots of her doing her stretch and folds on her sourdough bread. And so it's like this, it feels like a synthesis of, you know, modernity and agrarian society that I think a lot of accounts are trying to lean into that. That's sort of the feature, not the bug, that you've got obvious touchstones of modern life and technology. Just the fact that you're watching somebody film their entire day and edit it means that the tradwife phenomenon is really driven or at least enabled by technology. But there are usually always really aesthetic points. I would say at real beautiful filming and style and sort of home lifestyle elements that have been part of our culture, our online culture, for at least since the internet came into being. You know, take Martha Stewart, who people used to have to, you know, get her magazine, watch her on TV in order to sort of follow the aesthetic trends that she was setting. But now you can really shape it or think about it in your own context. You can search for accounts that suit you, and you don't have to stick with any particular time period, but you are always going to have a real modernist element that makes it accessible and doable in your own sphere, because every single one of us probably has a device, at least because we're watching accounts on a computer or a phone. And so the people who have eschewed technology, in ironically, I would say, are not really participating in the tradwife genre of today. So it's really fun, as I said, but you've got to have a kind of coherent aesthetic. You can be sincere or a little bit ironic. And the essential element is that you're at home in whatever space that looks like, and that you are making it beautiful.
I regularly ask you to do us a big favor by partnering with us, by doing something that costs you just your time, and that's to help us out with the algorithm. It seems like Apple Podcast comments is really the place online, even if you get your podcast wherever you listen to them, to best give us a rating and review so that the algorithm recommends us to other people. So thanks so much for a brand new review from Papsr, P-A-P-S-R. And the title of this review is Thought-Provoking and Informative. And this review says, as a Christian living in this secular everything goes world, this podcast helps one decipher sound principles over misleading worldly messaging. So thank you so much, Papsr, for your review. Really appreciate it. And if you don't even have time to give us a sentence and just have time to give us a starred review, please do so. We don't have the pop-up asking you to star review us, but if you go on over to Apple Podcasts, search for Postmodern Realities and do that, we'd be so grateful. And we also were wondering if you could just help us out because we don't have a subscription anymore. It is completely free of charge. And that's a great thing about our website. We have thousands of articles, literally, from almost 45 years of being a print magazine on the website, along with other videos and audio and our flagship Bible Answer Man broadcast at equip.org. And it's completely free, no paywall. And most media sites, there's a paywall. So even Christian media sites, there's a paywall or a subscription. It's totally free at equip.org. So if you could consider giving us a tip, we'd be so grateful. Just head on over to equip.org, click on journal, then click on postmodern realities. And if you do that, at any landing page, there's a link where you could give us a tip. So we'd really appreciate that. And thank you so much for listening and downloading. So please share this episode with a friend. It's kind of just really interesting. Trad Wives has gotten so much press, and here's another take on it. And so we went deep and like looked at a lot of their content and evaluated it for you. What is it all about, and how can we respond to it, or what should Christians think about the Trad Wives movement? So if you would like to support us, we'd be so grateful just with downloading, sharing, rating, reviewing, and giving us a tip. So now back to my conversation with Ann Kennedy. And more on Trad Wives.
I think there's an element, of course, as to why it's gotten so much press, of controversy around this Trad Wife movement. Because, you know, a few years ago, when everyone was into the cottagecore thing, young, I don't know, millennials or Gen Z or something, it was seen as whimsical and fun that women were, you know, gardening and wearing traditional dresses and so forth, but it wasn't tied to anything else. Whereas this particular movement, in some spheres, people are alarmed by it because they believe that it has to do with traditional, what they would call traditional gender roles. And then in Christian circles, there's some alarm that it also has to do with people who, quote unquote, believe in submission, whether that be in the home or ecclesiastical. And so therefore, that is alarming. So why is the movement, you know, generating this controversy? Because somehow it's tied to gender roles, because people keep mentioning feminist, you know, classics like the Feminine Mystique as a counterpart to what these women are doing.
Yeah, this is what's been interesting, because, you know, Martha Stewart has been around for a long time, and like there was no harm, no foul in like being, you know, trying to cook like Martha Stewart. You know, there wasn't any sort of internal contradiction 30 years ago. If you, that the sort of idea that a woman could have it all, you know, you could, you'd have your job, you could be a great mom, and you know, or you could be the CEO, be a great mom, and produce cakes like Martha Stewart and have a perfect house. I think that was the dream, the assumption of 30 years ago, or whenever I was young. I can't even remember how old I am. So that was assumed. That was the expectation. And I really do think through the last, you know, through the, at least the last 10 years, that as Gen Z women and have sort of grown up and are growing up, they've just had it. I think they are disappointed. The down economy has meant that they aren't going to get to be, you know, the CEO of a company and own a house and have a family, because they probably can't find a guy. They have to work jobs that are just deeply exhausting to them. I've watched a lot of TikToks of young women just coming unglued, and I think rightfully so, about what the work world is. I don't think it's rewarding for women anymore. I think it's an incredible slog. And so the feminists of previous generations, who expected that young women would come up and take their place, didn't account for, you know, how the world that they built wouldn't even economically be there for women by the time, you know, they assumed their daughters would take their place. Well, their daughters can't, because it's really hard to get meaningful work that's not just an unbearable grind. And so I think this generation is, this newest generation is just kind of saying, I'm not willing to kill myself for somebody else's ideological agenda. I want a husband. I don't want to kill, I don't want to work my fingers to the bone. I don't want to be a lawyer. I want somebody to take care of me like that. I mean, women are coming out and saying it in sort of mainstream journals and outlets. And I think the shift in outlook and expectation has really caught kind of the old guard off kilter, and they don't. And I would guess that that's where the backlash and the controversy is coming from. Although, I mean, I know there are a lot of young women who are, insisting that the trad wife phenomenon is misogynist and also racist. But I think for the most part, the young women I know have just decided they're doing it differently. They're just not buying it. The feminism and all its promises have not delivered, and they aren't prepared to try to continue in a world that is going to materially exhaust them. And so they're just doing it differently. And I don't know. And I think anytime anybody feels, the rejection of the younger generation, they get angry. In this case, I think it's interesting because the promises of the last 100 years for women, a lot of Christians and other kinds of people saw that those were untenable. So it's interesting to me now that a good number of Christians have forgotten that we thought that it was untenable, and so are upset about this trend, because I think it's sane. I think for women to try to recover and valorize home life is a sane and a spiritually beneficial thing to have happen. I don't think it's nefarious, because women aren't about to be, we're not at a place culturally where women are about to be really, subjugated. Maybe that might happen, in 100 years or something. But right now, that's not one of our biggest concerns. There are other more pressing troubles for women. And so I think this trend, I find sort of enlivening and interesting, but I can see why it's so controversial and why so many people are upset about it.
So you kind of mentioned that it began in earnest a couple of years ago when some mainstream media outlets started reporting on the trad wife movement, but is there a particular person or a group of people that are credited for starting the trad wife movement?
Well, so as far as I could dig around, I mean, I always feel like I should offer many caveats, because every time I find out something, about how you keep following more and more trails, you could keep clicking forever and find more and more information that you obviously didn't have before. But in this latest iteration, the person that I found that is credited by places like The Guardian and New York Post, I think, as being the sort of founder of the modern trad wife movement, is an English woman who started something called the Darling Academy. And let's see, her name is escaping me, but her last name is Petit or Petit. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. And she has her Christian testimony posted on her website, although the latest interview in the New York Post, I think, is, I don't know, it was a little vague. I don't know if they were spinning her story or, they made her sound like she wasn't a Christian, for me as a Christian.
Elena K. Pettit, that's her
Pettit,
name.
Pettit, yes, right. So her testimony is really fascinating, and it's a little bit like Mary Harrington and some other women of millennial women who leaned fully into feminism, and you know, they went to university, they tried out drugs and alcohol and careerism, and didn't question the kind of world that we all lived in the, you know, the 90s. And like many others, she burnt out of that. She became a young mother and was isolated and alone and depressed, probably had some postpartum depression and didn't know how to live. And in Pettit's case, she became, you know, she says she became a Christian and was helped by the church and by discovering a world that she hadn't known as a child very much, that if you concentrate on your home and building a home, keeping a home, making it beautiful, you can get a sense of, you know, stability and peace and order and joy. A lot of things that she as a child desperately wanted to experience and wasn't, and didn't get to. And I think that's a story that I've kind of run into over and over again. I've run into it with, you know, women in my own church who kind of have backed away from modern assumptions about careerism that just haven't, that were not questioned through the 80s and 90s. People began to follow Pettit. She got on Instagram. Her blog is kind of prolific. She's recently moved to Australia. And then it kind of took off from there. The hashtag took off and more people started to just kind of lean into that idea of homemaking and femininity. And I don't know, I can't remember exactly, but it seems like in 2022, it began to be controversial. And then more lately, it's blown up again. There were kind of the sourdough wars on Twitter as people commented back and forth about how realistic it is, for example, to follow Ballerina Farm and, you know, maybe want to adopt that aesthetic when that family is the in the same family as the people who own JetBlue and other airlines. So you may really love sourdough bread, but how well can you bake it if you earn under $1 million? So I think the money question, economics, along with culture, is kind of what has brought it back again into another round of controversy.
Well, I think it's interesting on Elena Pettit's blog or website, she does have a featured article as What is a Trad Wife? Because I think people come to her. And she particularly has a paragraph that says, a trad wife is not racist. She's inclusive. So what have been some of the, I guess, accusations that the trad wife movement is of a particular persuasion and or ethnic background that it would cause people to say it's a racist movement, because she goes on to address that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I had been following various trad wife accounts that were very ethnically diverse before I came across that accusation. So I have kind of very much struggled to understand where that's coming from, other than that I think there is a sort of knee jerk when you don't like something and you find it stressful, it must therefore be racist. It's like the worst, it's an easy way to alarm people, because racism is very wicked. So I just feel like that's a really knee jerk response that keeps happening in different social media spheres over and over again. And I would say that I don't think being a trad wife at all is racist, but I would imagine that some of the most famous accounts, like Ballerina Farm, are of white women who have a particular aesthetic of sort of Americana. The Hannah Ballerina Farm is a stunning woman. She's she won the Mrs. America contest a few years ago. I mean, she's a gorgeous person, and watching her keep her home, you know, if you're like me, you're 5 feet and you don't look like that. You probably would feel maybe deeply envious, both of the money and the aesthetic and just how gorgeous she is. And so I think that the attraction that people feel to watch accounts like that, that are white and middle class and, or maybe upper middle class, you could say, oh, well, people liking to watch that is a sign of racism. And picking it and the algorithm pushing it to you is just another sign of our racist heritage and proclivities. And that, I mean, of course, that could be true. I'm sure that some people who consume Tradwife content are racist. That's definitely a possibility. But I don't think the form itself is, because you can go and find so much content that is ethnically diverse and religiously diverse. I've been watching a couple of Orthodox Jewish accounts, and there's a really beautiful Muslim. She's not like sort of identifiably Muslim, but all of her food and her aesthetic, she has like very, very beautiful sort of Arabic script things in her home. And then there's many, many Black women who would fall under the Tradwife hashtag. And so I just think that that's kind of a cheap accusation, and it's going to keep coming, I think, as long as women decide of whatever ethnicity to make money this way and not sort of involve themselves in traditionally corporate situations. You'll probably keep getting the accusation of racism and white supremacy.
Well, we did discuss at the top of this podcast just the different, you know, it's kind of nebulous in one sense to say Tradwife, because it could be anybody from unmarried to, like you just mentioned, you know, various different ethnicities and so forth. But one of the things that people bring up in media coverage, and I'm talking about mainstream media, is that it is rooted in religion. So particularly, I think there are some, even within the Christian community, who have concerns, because everywhere I'm seeing in these articles, it means that women are going back to quote unquote submission under their husbands, which is kind of a word only used in like religious, particularly Christian, because those are words the Bible uses in terms of issues, both ecclesiastical and familial. And so just wondering about that. Does a trad wife have to be religious? Because there are concerns that it was partially, you mentioned Elena and she's, or Alana, she's religious, but are most trad wives religious or come from some kind of religious background?
I mean, it seems like a lot are. There's sort of a Mormon bent, I think, in a lot of these accounts. Well, Ballerina Farm is Mormon, and I mean, we can talk about whether Nara Smith is a trad wife or not, but there's sort of this Mormon adjacent quality. She mentions that she's reading the scriptures and praying. She has mentioned it on her account. But yeah, there's definitely Christian trad wives and Jewish ones, but you don't have to be a Christian to be a trad wife by any means. It's more an aesthetic than a religious sensibility, I would say, because all the accounts kind of share a certain manner of speaking and style of filming. It's really the aesthetic and not the overtly religious value that is drawing views, I would say. And I think it's, again, I must be missing something, but I don't see how you can say that it's all about submission, because the accounts that are most popular, and I would say that probably people who are trying to build their accounts are trying to get popular so that they can earn money, is a way of earning you know, contributing to a household income through the use of social media. So you're developing your lifestyle, aesthetic, and potentially brand in order to get money to contribute to your household. That's entrepreneurial. I don't know what many people mean when they're worried about female submission, because it is something that the Bible talks about. But a man who's like, you need to keep posting to keep the clicks coming so that we can, you know, sell merchandise or, you know, develop our family brand, that's really female driven. And if anything, it seems to be a very kind of equalizing economic situation, because when men do appear in the frame, they're helping their wives. You might see them, you know, holding a baby or clearing up the dishes, or in some case, they might be out farming, driving a tractor. They're very much secondary characters, the men, in a good trad wife reel. Nobody's clicking on them in order to watch the men, in other words. But it's a valorization of femininity that I think probably can only happen with the support and the encouragement of men, if they're there. And I don't know. I don't think you'd see very many women be able to pull off the beauty and the apparent joy in many of these little snapshots of life if the woman was being completely subjugated and held under the thumb of a man. I wouldn't rule it out necessarily, but again, like the accusation of racism, I think it's just kind of, it feels to me like a little bit of a hysterical, I don't like this, this must be misogynist, this must be racist, because it doesn't, it is a rejection of everything that I've held dear. That's what it feels like to me, but I could, of course, be totally wrong.
Well, we have been discussing just the aesthetic and the vibe of these accounts. And so one thing I want to address is what they actually wear. And some people are saying, well, trad wives are trying to, especially religious ones, they're going by 1 Timothy 2, which in verse 9 says that women should adorn themselves with respectable apparel and with modesty. And so the trad wife kind of uniform, or like I said, vibe, is a certain kind of way that in which they dress. So what are some of the outfits that you might see on a trad wife? Are they indeed trying to hearken back to, you know, Little House on the Prairie or the 1950s?
There are some that do that. There are some very kind of dolled up, very elegant trad wife accounts where the hair has been obviously worked on for quite a long time. And then you see them, you know, making food, and you think, well, if I was making food, I would not have time to do my hair like that. But, you know, the point is what's on the screen, probably not what's actually in the oven. But then there are the very prairie sort of options. And there's the, you know, the occasional pair of jeans that shows up on a tradwife account. I got caught up watching, I don't know that you would call it a tradwife, except that it kept coming up in all my feeds, of a young pastor's wife who makes herself up for church. And she's, because this is the latest height of fashion for hair, makeup, and then like kind of the jean option for church that's very modest, but also very to the moment, which I thought was kind of fun and interesting. But then I just think when you're going to talk about fashion in tradwife content, you do have to talk about Nara Smith. And I don't know if it even matters whether or not she's a real tradwife, because she, how she's shaping the genre is so fascinating to me. She cooks in really evening wear, like she'll put on a cocktail dress, or she'll wear like her pregnant belly, which is, you know, without stretch marks, will be bare, but then she'll wear like puffed sleeves and a sort of a prairie collar, if you could call it that. And it's so interesting and strange. Like, it's, she's a model, so she probably has access to clothes that, you know, I would never want to even fathom putting on. And she, of course, she's fully made up. Her makeup, her hair, it's as if, you know, somebody probably comes in and does it for her every day, although you see her putting on her own makeup regularly.
It, so maybe not. It seems like something, because it's just really done. Like, if you, and maybe because she's a model, she's used to getting the makeup done, but the aesthetic of it, I guess that's who she is, but you're not quite sure if she's serious or satire, or it can't be. She's got millions of followers. But I do want to ask you about specific people, since you started talking about Nora Smith, and you've mentioned a few times the ballerina farm. And then there's another girl, Lisa at Farmhouse, just as terms of like big content creators. And I think people who are making fun of the whole trad wife phenomenon, they bring up Nora Smith, even if she isn't literally a trad wife. But I looked at her Substack, and I think she's being very serious. So I guess she's hit on something, but it just seems unattainable. She's got a model's body, even though she's pregnant, like really thin, but, you know, pregnant. And then she's cooking these very multi-course, extremely elaborate meals.
Yeah, she is mesmerizing. If you go down a trad wife rabbit hole and then you end on Nora Smith, you'll have a hard time shifting off and then finding other trad wife content. Like, she is, I mean, I have watched her make marshmallows. I've watched her make cereal by hand. She makes whatever it is. She'll announce some kind of strange craving that I've also never had, and then she'll set about making it. Or, you know, her husband will want some kind of food, and so she'll make, you know, pasta from scratch, interesting salads. I mean, she's kind of an interesting culinary figure, if, you know, in the sort of the long history of food on television. Nora Smith definitely fits into that genre, but she's a really fascinating person to watch. And I do feel like she's sort of making the genre, even if she doesn't fit into it and isn't technically a trad wife. And of course she's not, because she's a model and she and her husband travel internationally for shows. And so the account is very much part of her brand in that regard. But yeah, the big ones that I've watched are the Ballerina Farm, which is a beautiful account to follow. She's, again, very thin. And
well, she's a ballerina. She's actually Juilliard trained.
Juilliard ballerina. And she's pretty relaxed. So watching how her children kind of run around is pretty great, because I, you know, when I was a young mother, I was screaming at my kids. So it's really nice to watch her let her kids, you know, do whatever they want in the kitchen and not freak out. I think that's, you know, if you were looking for how to be around young children, I would recommend Hannah, because she's so relaxed, and at least on screen, who knows how it is when they're trying to set up for maybe, you know, to film something. I don't know if they're that relaxed, but on screen they are. And then Lisa at Farmhouse Boone is fun. She has some kind of partnership with Walmart, and she's big into fermentation and sourdough. And she has a lot of, you know, interesting home tips, like how she keeps track of all of her kids' clothes. I think she has 8 kids. And then there are younger accounts. I think those women have been at it a little bit longer. I really do like Sophia the Jew. I don't even know if she uses the hashtag tradwife, but she shows herself getting, you know, trying on clothes and getting ready for the Sabbath dinners. And she's very breezy, very, very Gen Z and fun. And so, there's just so many accounts that you can follow. You get a peek into somebody's life that I would say is probably, you know, maybe 50% how it really is. But if you are a woman and you're married with children, you don't need the full picture, because you know what's behind the screen. You know, if you were going to film something, you would clean your dining room before you put everything out on the table. I mean, I don't know that we have to have you know, maybe the era of pure authenticity and letting it all hang out is passing away, and the era of trying to step it up and show that life can be beautiful and ordered has come upon us. And I feel like that's probably a good development for the state and the spiritual lives of young women.
Now, you're talking about the spiritual lives of young women, and so many articles, whether it's Christian media or mainstream media, have shown a bit of alarm that people might be influenced by some kind of conservative religious thinking. Do you think this is some kind of theological backlash against feminism, maybe in just kind of a social, just on a social media type of way? Do you think it's suddenly there's a flocking of women to, I don't know how it would be, you know, just these maybe oppressive biblical commands, is, I guess it's being shaped that really this is a movement that men are cheering because women are submitting to them. Is there anything at all to that kind of influence spiritually to women?
I mean, first of all, I don't know how huge this phenomenon is and its staying power. Because, okay, for since 2022, Tradwives has been coming up in many, many media circumstances. There's been tons of articles written, and there are lots of accounts that are getting bigger and bigger. So it's definitely something to pay attention to, I guess, if you're following social media trends. But is it worth becoming, you know, hysterical because all the women are going to really be sent back to the kitchen because men are so patriarchal and this is what they wanted all the time? I really doubt it. I think that the relationships between men and women are still in total disarray. And what's happening is that some women have found something that they enjoy and that works for them. And it's quite traditional looking. It means that they are choosing family, they're choosing a home, they're deciding to make financial decisions that allow them to stay in the place where they feel comfortable with their home and their family and their kids. And they can earn money that way, which is quite an old and traditional way of being, actually. But is it a sign that, you know, feminism is over and everybody needs to become, you know, hysterical and upset? I seriously doubt that it represents the end of feminism. I think it represents the end of feminism for a lot of young women who just don't care anymore, but that's not everyone. And I think, you know, the girl boss phenomenon is still there. There are still a lot of women in Western countries that are, you know, vehemently pro-abortion and kind of anti-marriage, anti-natalist. But yeah, there are a lot of women who have decided that they are not doing that anymore. They want children, they want a family. And so if you're the sort of person who believes that women choosing a family, a husband, children, and a home life is a really dangerous thing to happen, and that they would also be religious, they would find religious reasons for doing it, then, you know, you might want to continue to be afraid. But I don't think it's completely shaking up our current world in the way that I might wish. And I don't think that it represents either, you know, untethered patriarchalism that subjugates women. Even very traditional Christian situations or theological situations are not traditionally patriarchal and for the subjugation of women in the way that they might have been, you know, 100 years ago. Because we have technology and social media, and there is an easy kind of equalizing way of relating between men and women, I don't think anybody needs to worry about the patriarchy at this point. Although I know that many, many, many people disagree with me on that subject.
Well, I do want to ask you about one former trad wife, and she kind of made the, you know, whole social media sphere that follow this wonder what went on with her, and that is the Canadian woman,
Lauren Southern, who used to be this like really right-wing political kind of trad wife promoting, and then things happened to her and she had a breakdown of her marriage and all kinds of things. So what would you say to people who would point to Lauren Southern? She's not that old now, but she was really in the midst of it in her early 20s, and say, hey, here's somebody who tried to embrace it, and she was actually, emotionally abused, maybe physically abused, and she has just repudiated all of it.
Yeah, it was so interesting to read her stories. She was interviewed by Mary Harrington recently, and I do commend that article. It's really interesting because she tried it out. This is one of those cases where I wish that people would get marriage counseling before they got married, because a lot of bad, toxic situations sometimes can be sort of fleshed out and seen ahead of time if you get good marriage counseling. Some of the problems, the toxicity, not always, but some of that comes out if you really interview a couple and try to get to know them before they get married. And it sounds like she leapt into a marriage without a lot of preparation, and it turned out that he was really controlling and she was not able to make him happy even when she tried staying home and not doing any of the work that she had been trained for, that she was really good at as a journalist and that she enjoyed. She tried to sublimate herself essentially to him, and it didn't work. And I think a lot of people do say, oh, okay, well, that is obviously the patriarchy. That's subjugation of women. Well, that's actually a really toxic personality situation where that's not the patriarchy. That's just a really bad man that you should avoid. And so she got away from him and got divorced and is carrying on with her career. And I think Mary Harrington made a really good point that, you know, you can go all in on a trad situation blindly without counting the cost, without really thinking about who you are and what your personality is and your gifts and your expectations of life. And if you do that and then you marry the wrong person or you marry somebody who's wicked, of course you're going to fall into trouble. And, you know, as men and women continue to try to figure out how to relate to each other in sane ways, I've seen it happen many times. I know people personally for who it's happened, but I don't think that means that, you know, a traditional way of life is therefore going to be toxic for everyone and you should just not bother. It's much more complicated than that. The personalities of the people involved, of who you are and what your expectations are and how you can organize your life together are really, really crucial. And I think the trouble with modern feminism is that it has overly simplified the question of women and, you know, broken ways that men and women have traditionally been able to understand each other. And so, I don't know, I think the trad phenomenon is complicated, but feminism is complicated and it's injured so many people. And we don't really get to hear or read articles about the damage done by feminism, by the pill and abortion to women. So I'd like to read those articles, one for everyone, about how bad the trad wife thing is.
It's funny that trad wives, or the phenomenon that's been, you know, that hashtag trad wife, meaning traditional wife, has kind of taken form on social media, because some of the things that are criticized, I find interesting just because I know people who would fit in that category, and they certainly don't seem to me the way the stereotype is being portrayed, at least by the media, because, I mean, you know, your social media is public and you have a lot of children and you have an herb garden. And I know you cook things from scratch, and I know your husband, you guys read aloud to your kids, even though they're older, and you have a lot of kids and you homeschool. So is it necessarily that you homeschool and bake sourdough bread? Sourdough bread must be the hipster thing. And it's not just, it's kind of hipster right now, even with people who aren't in trad wives, you know, just people who are into cooking. It's kind of gotten a renaissance lately where, you know, people are very interested in learning how to make their own sourdough starter and
things like that. Even my own son, who has yet to make something with his sourdough starter, I suppose he got his starter from a trad wife. It's another homeschool mom with a lot of kids at our church, and he's been feeding it very faithfully, even in college. So I think he's going to try to cook stuff with it this summer. But all that to say is, do these things necessarily mean you're in some kind of horrific situation? Because it seems to be, on one level, mocked, especially if you go into the comments section. You know, who is this? Why would they be making something from scratch? Now, again, like we said, it wasn't an issue for Martha Stewart or, I guess, the Pioneer Woman. And it's not an issue, like, I like to follow a lot of food accounts, so I see a lot of those. But there's all kinds of people baking bread with a whole bunch of kids that are, you know, progressive people, but it doesn't seem to have the same weight as if you were some mom that didn't work outside the home.
Yeah, that's what I mean, it feels to me like a little bit disingenuous because, yeah, I think a lot of people have cobbled together home lives that make sense for them. And it's a little bit like thinking, you know, sort of lumping together all, you know, white evangelicals who are really the bane of American existence. Well, you know, if you go to church and you take your children to church and then you make bread afterwards, you must be the problem. I think that it's not true. It's not you can't lump vast groups of people together by ethnicity and bread making skills and have really described anything of noteworthiness, I think. And yeah, I think if you get into average church and interviewed all the women, you would find an amalgamation of different kinds of lifestyles that in many ways probably very much resemble each other, where, you know, people cook some things from scratch and they buy others and they let each other off the hook, you know, and they try really hard and they might have a beautiful home or they might get their hair dyed or they might wear prairie dresses. It's just called being a regular human. And what's interesting about it, though, is that I think the apologies for not trying to have it all have gone away. So nobody's trying to have it all anymore. So most of us are just trying to have order and a little bit of peace in the modern era, which means concentrating on the things that really do matter most, like your children's culinary habits and, you know, making a beautiful space for your family to live in. And if you homeschool, making sure that you're not drowning in clutter. So yeah, I think a lot of people, I know everybody on my street would think I'm a trad wife because I'm home all day. I wear, you know, a lot of dresses because they're comfortable and my kids are home all day and we're always in the kitchen cooking. And when we go to church on Sunday, we all troop out like Amish people. People do look at us really strangely when we walk out, because in my church, there's a social contagion going on right now of, well, through the winter, every single teenage girl bought herself off of Amazon a long wool skirt, and they would all wear them on the same day. So it wasn't a dress code. Like, nobody said you have to dress this way, but every single girl under 20 would go to church wearing a really long woolen skirt. And so the neighbors think we're really, really creepy and probably cultish, but actually we're just muscling along through life. And I think people are just going to have to deal with it because it's probably going to get worse as more and more people get tired of the economy, the down economy, and they have to make their bread. You know, they can't afford to go to restaurants. They're going to have to, you know, step up their cooking skills. And then they're going to have to go to church because, you know, they need meaning and God. It's just not that complicated. And ultimately, it's not that controversial.
What can you say to women who, and maybe even a younger generation, especially this younger generation is so full of anxiety that, you know, they're watching all these TikToks because I guess their anxiety is from watching all these TikToks and Instagram reels. And they feel like, is there some kind of uniform for a Christian woman or some specific way that I need to be? I mean, how do you encourage those women to, you know, follow the Lord without thinking, do I have to be making sourdough? How do I get sourdough starter? What do I do?
Well, one of the most important things is to make sure that, you know, there's something compelling enough that's offline to attract the attention of the young so that they can give it a rest and just, you know, decide what they want to wear because it's comfortable and they like the way it looks for themselves. And I think too much of our culture, probably even Christian culture, is not compelling. It's not maybe that beautiful. A lot of churches aren't aesthetically desirable and they don't induce a desire for prayer. And there are no, you know, really nice places to sit and be with people in your church and get to know them in a non-online way. I think the best way to reduce anxiety is not to spend too much time online. So making sure that people are making their aesthetics choices for real because they suit an actual embodied life, and that your Instagram reels are really only sort of tangentially for you to get an idea here or there, but not for you to form your entire identity. That would be, you know, my dream. I don't know if it's possible, but that's what, you know, I think Christian parents should be aspiring to do. If you have an online life, it should be as a supplement and not as the main loaf of bread, if we wanted to say it like that. But yeah, I don't know. It's an uphill battle. And you're right. Anxiety is the name of the game, and social isolation. And if you think that, you know, you see other people being happy, wearing a certain kind of clothes and living a certain kind of way, then you probably are going to try it out. And I think if it is wholesome, then it might be okay. But if it's at the expense of real human relationships, it's not going to be helpful.
And I think, you know, no matter where you fall on, and we've talked about various things in this vein, the issue, quote unquote, of women in the church or whatever, I think all Christian women would agree that being a Christian woman is also a life of knowing God's people and knowing God. And so I think young women, or any age women, because it could be older women. I mean, I think there's some probably moms in their 30s and 40s where, I don't know, when I was a young mom, I didn't see all this aesthetic of these perfectly things or even baking bread. Although I have to say, my kids have a lot of food allergies, so I had to cook from scratch, you know, but I didn't cook bread from scratch. But just that idea of the pursuit of knowing God, which is not about an aesthetic at all. It's about knowing the person of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, again, if your corporate worship is really compelling and nourishing and convicting so that men and women together are meeting Jesus, I think most of these things settle out and a lot of the conflictual relationships between men and women go away. I think if women were really fed by the scriptures in deep and compelling ways, which is happening in certain places, but I think across the spectrum of American Christianity, you see a real anemia for women and men. And so because we long for heaven and we need home and we need God, if you're not getting it in church and you don't have a robust in-person community, of course, a little bit of that need is going to be satisfied by watching Ballerina Farm. And if you feel lonely and you're just with your kids by yourself, maybe you want to watch a lot of Nara Smith because it just makes it feel better. So there is a little bit of consumptiveness about it. All social media consumption, it doesn't feed you. It takes a little bit. It dulls something and takes a little bit from you. So that's why it should be very, very much in moderation. But yes, I really think the church being a real church that meets in person and is compelling and is rich and deep and doesn't go to half measures to cheapen things will go much farther to dealing with, you know, just helping people sort out their lives. And if they want to be trad wives on Instagram, I guess that would be fine if it brought glory to God, but they might also have other better things to do with their lives.
Well, on another note that doesn't have to do with homemaking or trad wives, I guess my fun question for you today is, have you ever made sourdough bread from scratch?
I have never made sourdough bread from scratch. I make bread all the time, but I just use regular yeast. I buy huge blocks of yeast, and I'm a little afraid of sourdough because it seems like it's such a big thing, and if you start, it appears to take over your life. But I mean, after writing this article, I feel like maybe I should give it a go.
I will say that I've only witnessed my college-age son do this, but it does require like a scale and measuring and various different size jars and a certain kind of flour to feed it and then letting it rise up for so many hours that it has to be timed. So yeah, sourdough seems a little laborious to me, but I guess, you know, it's the trend for now. But thank you, Anne, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
You've been listening to episode 396 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, and we are almost to that big milestone of 400 episodes. Today's guest was Anne Kennedy, who joined me in a discussion about the Trad Wives movement. She has written an article for her Theological Trends column for the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called, How Traditional Are Trad Wives? Evaluating the Social Media Movement. And you can read her article for free at our website, equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.